Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 135, Jungian Sand Play Therapy, January 30th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
What I would think of is it's most closely to dreams, kind of dreaming in vivo. And instead of coming in and telling your therapist your dreams, here you dream right in the room, into the tray. And the thing different from dreams and sand play is you get to actually concretely put the images in the sand and then to look at them and be with them. And we don't interpret at all. So it's really the process comes from the deep unconscious, and it's a form of play, as we say, but also as bringing deep issues in the unconscious to some kind of consciousness.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Liza Ravitz. Liza J. Ravitz, PhD, is a Jungian analyst who teaches at the San Francisco C.G. Jung Institute's Continuing Education Program. Liza practices in San Francisco and Petaluma, where she works with children and adults, conducts consultation groups for therapists, and presents sand play workshops. Liza studied sand play in Switzerland and worked in the sand with Dora Kauf. She is a certified teaching member of the International Society for Sand Play Therapy. Liza teaches sand play therapy in the Department of Psychiatry's Child and Adult Outpatient Clinic at California Pacific Medical Center, and helps create sand play programs and train staff at mental health centers in the Bay Area. Liza has presented her work both nationally and internationally. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Liza Ravitz, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and what an interesting day it is. You live in Petaluma. Yes. I live in Rohnert Park, so that's about 6 or 7 miles separate. And it is a rainy, rainy Northern California day. But I wanted to, because you're and I never know whether to say sand tray or sand play. Which do you use?
Sand play. In this context, it's sand play.
Sand play therapy.
Yes.
And so I wanted to interview you in person, although we could have done it over the phone as I do many of my shows, but I knew that you would have a rich environment.
Yes.
And I wanted to immerse myself in that environment. So I drove down here on this rainy day, and you're located right in downtown Petaluma, Petaluma being in a recent book described as a latte town.
A latte town.
Did you see that book?
No, I didn't. But it does have a gold digging past.
Yes, it
so
does.
It's way back from the gold digging times.
Yeah, I didn't realize it goes. It does go, I suppose, back to the gold days. And then it was an egg town. It has a big history.
Yes, it does.
With Jewish egg farmers, which
yes.
most people don't think of.
No.
Jewish egg farmers.
No, they don't. Yes,
and now it's becoming a more and more sort of trendy, artistic, bohemian little town.
Yes, that's the new transformation.
Yeah, the new transformation. So I'm sitting here in a nice second-story office in an older building that's filled with therapists of various stripes.
Yes.
And on your walls, I wish I had a video component here because, as one might expect, your walls are lined with shelves, and on the shelves are all these tiny little figures.
Yes.
Have you counted how many you have?
I haven't counted how many I have, but it's been many, many years of collecting them.
What would you estimate? How many do you think you have
figures?
Here?
How many figures?
Looks to me like I would estimate it maybe 200 or 300 at least.
Oh, at least. Oh, at least.
So there's plenty of material here for people to act out their fantasies. There are all sorts of little princesses and, I suppose, kings and animals and
they
probably
actually,
warriors and Buddhas. And
yes, and what's supposed to be on the shelves is everything that is, that was, and that will be.
Interesting.
So that's what's on the shelves, from spiritual miniatures through everyday people, wild animals, domesticated animals, household things, and then all kinds of natural things like shells and rocks and acorns and flowers and feathers.
Well, that's great. That's great. As I might have mentioned to you, one of my listeners asked me to conduct an interview with a sand play therapist, and then I was referred to you by Dr. Maria Hess,
oh, yes,
who I think has studied with you some, and
yes,
who studied with me, actually, for a long time. She was my teaching assistant, and now she's a very successful teacher and therapist,
yes,
in her own right, and also has been a guest on this show two or three times, and I also have many listeners who share my own interests in Jungian psychology.
Yes.
So why don't we start out with me asking you how you came to be a Jungian analyst? And I know you have a PhD. Were you a psychologist first?
Yes, and I'm still a psychologist.
Okay.
But yes, I was a psychologist. And then you go the extra training to become a Jungian analyst.
It takes a long time. It's not easy. And I hear the San Francisco Institute in particular is pretty challenging.
It's very challenging.
Yeah.
It's
tell us a little bit about what you went through.
Well, you have to go through 4 years of courses and then probably another, you know, 5 or 6 years of training and consultation and
And going through a Jungian analysis yourself,
you
right?
must go through a Jungian analyst analysis, and the whole time that you're at the institute in training, and you learn more about your patients through senior consultants, and eventually you need to go before a few boards and you need to write up some cases and just demonstrate that you have a sense about what you're doing from a Jungian point of view.
And they can turn you down at any point.
They can turn you down.
And they don't have to really give you a lot of explanation either.
No, they don't. And you can go back a step and then try again. And the main thing, though, that they really look at is your personal development.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that's unique about the San Francisco Institute especially is that their emphasis is on personal development as well as professional development around your patients.
Okay.
Because, of course, if you haven't dealt with your own complexes and your own issues, you can't really deal with someone else's.
Right. Now, what sort of therapeutic stripe were you of before you went to the Jung Institute to get your training?
Well, I think I've kind of been on a real journey in that respect. When I did my PhD, I was trained as a behaviorist.
Interesting.
And, yes.
That's a very far afield.
Very far afield,
yeah.
And have always worked with children and adults. So my PhD program was in both. And then I became a family therapist. And in those days, there weren't many around. And I was a family therapist for a very long time and still have very strong roots in systems theory.
Okay.
And when I moved to California, I was reading a, it's called The Secret of the Golden Flower. And it's a Buddhist treatise. And I've always had difficulty integrating my spiritual interests and my psychological interests. And I open it up. And the introduction is by this fellow, C.G. Jung.
Carl Jung, yes.
And it was all about integrating psychology and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real a high for me.
Yeah.
And I realized that Jungian psychology was where I could integrate my interests and feel like a whole person doing my work.
Very good. Just out of curiosity, where did you do that behavioral doctoral work?
I was at DePaul University in Chicago.
Okay. Yes, a well-known university.
Yes, when I was there, the basketball team was the top in the nation. Okay. And the band Chicago came out of DePaul.
Yeah. Okay, so we're here to talk about sand play. So how did you get involved in sand play work?
Well, I actually grew up on the East Coast near the ocean. So sand and water have always been part of my life from childhood. And also one of the things we did in my family was we collected miniatures.
Oh, what a natural.
And some of the miniatures in my collection come from my childhood.
Interesting.
And when I moved to California, I went to work at a mental health center, and I walked in and I see this tray with sand in it and all these miniatures. And it was like I had come home.
That was where? You walked in where?
Into a mental health center in San Francisco.
In San Francisco. So yes. Somebody there had that sort of a setup.
They had the setup, but interestingly, their sandbox was about, I'd say, about 10 feet long and about 3 feet wide and about a foot high. And the kind of usual size of the sand tray, as you can see, is about 2x3.
Yes, it's a lot smaller. It almost looks like it's made to be portable if necessary.
Yes, and it's actually, when you look at it, it's actually the range of your vision. And that's why it's the size that it is. So when you look down, you can see the whole box.
Okay.
So my original introduction was really to a sandbox, which I always feel quite amused about at the size of it.
Okay. I don't know if you know about Wikipedia on the internet.
Oh, yes.
It's a wonderful resource, and often when I'm trying to get a little background information for a show that I'm going to do, often I will consult Wikipedia.
Yes.
I was shocked to see that neither sand tray nor is it Norakoff? Korakoff?
Dora. With a
Dora.
Dorakoff.
Dorakoff.
Yes.
Neither were listed on Wikipedia. So maybe somebody out there will get inspired by listening to this. Why don't you give us a bit about the history of sand play? Because I know that you study with Dorakoff and that she's an important figure in the history.
Yes, sand play went through various different beginnings until Dorakoff became involved in it. And she's the one really responsible for the way sand play is today. And she was Swiss, and she lived down the street from Jung. And Jung would send his children to Dora's house to play. Hmm. And one day he bumped into her on the street and said, "What do those children do at your house? They always come home so calm." And she got into a discussion with Jung about her sand tray and her miniatures, and he was very taken with it because the method was very Jungian, and they began to collaborate, and through his talking with her, mm-hmm. and she developed it into the Jungian method that it is today.
Well, originally she had it just as kind of a sandbox for kids to play in, is that?
Well, her children played in it, and as she was developing it more and more, and she, of course, saw patients and originally just did it with children, but then eventually did it with adults.
Okay.
But she was developing it all this time while she was working with it.
And I remember reading about Jung when he was going through a time of crisis that his waterworks,
yes.
Right? Didn't he play with sand and stones in nature?
Yes, he did. He did. He actually built a tower out of rocks and
a large physical
a large
house
physical
that he could live in. Yes,
yes. Where kind of made a room of his own,
mm-hmm.
and while he was in deep kind of self-evaluating, the only thing that worked for him was to go back to his childhood games of playing with sand and water and stones.
Yes, I think I saw a film clip in which he's got his, I don't know if it was a film clip or a still photo, but he had his britches kind of rolled up yes. to his knees, and he's yes. kind of wading in shallow water, and he's making little dams and things like that, which brings back my own childhood days. My grandparents had a cabin in the mountains in Southern California, and I used to yes. build dams and so on in the
yes.
stream there.
Yes, because that early childhood play is really the channel to creativity mm-hmm. and to the deepest part of ourselves.
Yes.
And children just contact that naturally.
Right, right.
And as we grow, unfortunately, a lot of us lose that connection.
Yeah.
And especially as adults. And one way to get it back is to return to those activities of mm-hmm. play.
Now, I'm remembering, and I'm blocking on her name, there is one of the early Jungian women who's most strongly associated with the idea of active imagination. She wrote some books. Is it Hannah?
Or Marie von Franz?
No, it's somebody else.
Hannah Siegel?
I meant to look this up before I came here. Well, yes. It's okay. It's of no great import.
Yes, yes. It was a very... developed by Jung, and so his disciples used it.
Yes, I would think that sand play would somehow be a subset of this larger Jungian activity or field that's been referred to as active imagination. Would that
yes.
be accurate?
It's what I would think of is it's most closely to dreams.
Yeah,
and it's kind of dreaming in vivo. And instead of coming in and telling your therapist your dreams, here you dream right in the room, into the tray. And the thing different from dreams and sand play is you get to actually concretely put the images in the sand and then to look at them and be with them. And we don't interpret at all. So it's really the process comes from the deep unconscious, and it's a form of play, as we say, but also as bringing deep issues in the unconscious to some kind of consciousness.
Is it hard not to interpret? I mean, sometimes, doesn't the mind just kind of leap to, oh, I know what that's about?
The mind, the therapist's mind does.
Yes,
yes,
right.
Yes,
right.
Yes, it does.
Is that part of the training then, learning to hold yourself back?
Oh, yes, of course. And that's similar to psychotherapy as well. The therapist's mind might be going someplace, but your job is really to stay with the patient. And sand play especially is about attuning to the patient and being with the patient and witnessing the work that they're doing. And it's a expressive bodily method. And in the ideal, we don't go into our heads while mm-hmm. the process is going mm-hmm. on.
That's really a break from the original psychoanalytic idea where the analyst would come up with some brilliant interpretation
yes.
and everything was supposed to come together.
Yes, yes. It is different, and that's one of the differences between psychoanalytic from a Freudian point of view and Jungian analytical psychology, is that interpretation is helpful, but what really gets to the core and what really makes change is contacting affect and contacting emotion
mm-hmm.
and working with the deep unconscious. And the belief in Jungian psychology is that given a safe place, the patient will naturally move toward a healing process, that the psyche naturally moves toward healing. So the therapist doesn't have to be brilliant and make interpretations. Mainly, the therapist needs to create a safe and protected space. And in Jungian psychology, we call that a temenos, a safe, sacred place where the psyche can unfold and people can do their work in a very depthful way in a safe place.
the container is often used as well, right?
That's
a safe container.
It's a safe container, yes. Not only the room and the temenos that the therapist creates, but of course the sand tray in itself is a container.
I had sort of thought to ask you about, what's your view of healing, but I think you've kind of expressed it, that there is a, that the psyche tends towards healing.
Yes, naturally.
Naturally.
We're born like that.
And that your job is to create that space in which that tendency can exercise itself.
That's right. That's right. And in terms of my ideas about healing is, just like we talked about before, we come in with a self that carries our essential being, and we get disconnected from that. And sand play, through sand play, we can reconnect in a very depthful way with our deepest essential nature, which is the self.
Mm-hmm.
And once we are in alignment with the self, once the consciousness and unconsciousness are in alignment, healing takes place.
In relation to the sand play, is that an auxiliary technique that you bring to your work, or is it the centerpiece of what you do? In other words, are you doing sand play with all of your patients, or is it an element that you bring in some of the time in sort of an adjunctive way?
Yes, I think that's a good question, and it really depends on the patient. Most of the time with children, I'd say up to maybe 11, from I see kids as young as 3 years old, My kids tend to almost always do the sand, work in the sand. And they may do art as well or play with some games, but they tend to pretty much stay with the sand as an activity until their process is complete. And that's how I know there's been a lot of healing, is when they eventually move away from the tray. The adults, it varies. Some adults never work in the sand, and some adults work a few times in the sand, and other adults do a whole sand play process, which could just be up to, 20 or 50 trays, if that's what speaks to them in their healing.
I could imagine that with adults, maybe in the work, there would be a point where you would maybe be inspired to say, well, what about the sand tray? Would you like to?
Yes.
Is that a kind of invitation that you would issue? And if so, what sort of situation might prompt that invitation?
Well, the what often happens is people come in, adults come in, and they're always very taken with the miniatures.
Yeah.
But they don't want to touch it. And they think it's for children.
Okay.
And so when I see certain adults really are drawn to it, but don't quite know what to do, often I'll invite them, you might want to come and work in the sand. And sometimes, especially when they're having difficulty verbally expressing what's going on inside, and or if they're in a very deep process that just doesn't have words, and the feeling is they really need to access a deeper part of themselves, and they're having difficulty doing that. And then I might invite them to go to the tray.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're familiar with it and they've used it and know about it, then it's up to them. If they want to go, they go, and I tend not to direct them after that. Then it's their own psyche pulling them there.
Yeah. I really like the way you link it to dreams. I like it because I'm very interested in dreams.
Yes.
And I've liked to work with dreams, I've taught courses on dreams, and have been in dream groups and so on. And of course, a person doesn't always remember their dreams.
Yes, that's right.
And so here you don't need them to remember anything.
No, you don't need them to remember them, no. And part of the technique is taking a picture of the production when the patient or client leaves the room.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a record of it,
mm-hmm.
and you can look back on it with your client at a much later time after they've maybe completed their process and the protocol usually is after years after they've terminated, you might have a patient come back and want to go over their Santres. Mm. And so we have a record of it in that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you invite them? Let's say they've... maybe you can help us understand the process at a little bit a more detailed level. As a person is creating something in the sand, creating some kind of little scene.
Yes.
Do you have them verbalizing during that? Are they talking about what they're feeling or what it means?
You're really just following them. And they might talk. You know, children often are playing a game, and so they'll have a whole fantasy going on, and often they're talking, and this happened, and that happened, and boys play a lot with soldiers, and girls play a lot with horses and unicorns, and children might speak in fantasy and what's going on, and then afterwards I might ask them, tell me about your picture. Do you have a story? And they might tell me a story or give me a title of what's going on. I don't really ask them questions mm-hmm. while they're doing the production because it tends to interrupt their process.
Mm-hmm. What about with adults?
And with adults, adults tend to initially want to know everything that's going on. So they'll ask me, well, what do you see? What do you interpret? What am I doing? And that just happens initially. Mm-hmm. And once an adult gets more into the process and can feel it in their body and feel the depth of it, those kinds of things tend to fall away. And sometimes adults will talk about, oh, I think this means this or this means that, or they may comment on, oh, I like the way this rock feels. It's so smooth. It reminds me of this, it reminds me of that. But oftentimes, there'll be silence while they're making a production.
And do feelings tend to come up? Are there tears?
They're usually some after it's finished. Mm-hmm. And we sit down and look at what's been made and kind of take in the wonder of it. I might say, tell me about your tray. And even in talking about, well, the rocks are going on a path and the houses over here and the well over here, and an association will come up to something in childhood or something that happened to them or maybe some trauma that happened to them, and they'll begin to talk about that. And through that talking, there will be affect, and there may be tears and sadness. Or as the time goes on, there may be some joy because they deeply feel the healing. Mm-hmm. So there is conversation, but it comes out of the patient. It's nothing that I really lead because the understanding is that the therapist is there to witness and to follow the patient's psyche. So I follow as opposed to lead in this situation.
Yes. I'm tempted to ask you to talk about a case history or something, but I didn't prompt you about that in advance, and it might be too difficult to come up with a adequate disguise on the spot. But is there any kind of story that you could share that would be appropriate?
Well, I have... so many, you know, going through my mind. But often with children, for instance, the one I'm thinking about was a child who was very afraid to leave their parent. And she was older. She was like 7 and was very clingy and had to be with her parents all the time and at home was afraid to be out of the room. And when she went to sleep, she had to check windows and doors and was a very fearful child. And through working in the sand, she was able to contact, and of course this is all unconscious, but contact a very young part of herself that felt abandoned because she had to be in the hospital as a very young child. She was maybe 3 or 4 and had to be hospitalized for a few months. And though she saw her parents, it was really quite a traumatic experience for her. And in those days, they didn't allow the parents to be as much in the room as they do now. And so she really felt an abandonment at that time and developed a lot of anxiety about separating from her parents. And in the sand, she was able to express that symbolically and to work through those feelings of abandonment and to strengthen herself through the process so that she no longer needed to cling to her parents so tightly. She got more in alignment with that deep self and through the play released a lot of emotion about that time and was just really strengthened. And when we finished, she no longer had any of those symptoms. She became much more independent and was able to have sleepovers where she never was able to do that before, and became much more energetic in her school and became more involved in activities. So a lot of energy was released through the sand play process that had been caught up in holding tight around her anxiety around separation. And I saw her for that particular child. I saw her for about a year. She probably did about 30 sand plays, I would say.
What about, that was a great job. What about an adult one? Does an adult one come to mind?
An adult one, let me see. I had a young woman who had a very disturbed father and who seemed like he was probably psychotic most of the time and had a very distant mother. And when she came in, she was very unhappy and very depressed and very shut down. And she worked for an arts organization and just didn't feel any meaning in life. And through the process in the sand, returning to her early times in childhood, again, a lot of this is unconscious. She kind of dealt very deeply with that fear of that psychotic father. Mm-hmm. And a figure that's often used in the sand is I have a figure of Hitler.
Interesting.
And Hitler is often used.
Yeah, a powerful archetypal figure there.
Very powerful of kind of a domination and an aggression and a no way out figure. And that might live inside them and also might be part of their experience. And she used that figure a lot. And she was able to contact parts of herself. And in the beginning, as I say, she was very depressed and didn't find any meaning in life. And as she returned to play in the sand, she was able to contact that creative part of her that had been so damaged by her childhood experience and became much more outgoing and much less depressed and was able to, in the sand, go from very dark productions like with scorpions and snakes and gorillas and wild beasts and dinosaurs and lots of sharks. And as she moved through her process, she was able to move into a place where her trays became much more beautiful with flowers, and she could create a secret garden where she could be and have peace. And at one point, she made a beautiful tray and we call these self trays. And a self tray is a production where the therapist and the patient can feel in the room a sacredness enter. And we know through looking at the tray and the feeling between us that the patient has constellated the self and has contacted that harmonious, deep layer of the psyche where creativity and sacredness lives. And in that contacting, there is enormous healing and realignment. And it was a very powerful experience for her to experience that in the sand.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. So that's self with the capital S.
With the capital S,
The higher self.
That's
or the
right.
big self.
The totality of the personality.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned that that Hitler figure.
Yes.
And it brought to mind that there is a little action figure of Carl Jung. I wonder
yes,
if you have,
is
that part of your collection
I
as well?
I don't have Jung, and there's also a Freud.
Yes.
And I actually don't have either one of them. They're a little big, actually.
Okay, right.
They're about 6 inches
yes,
high,
uh-huh.
and the figures tend to be around 3 inches or so. Though I have some, as you can see, that are larger.
Yeah.
But I don't have the Jung or the Freud.
Okay. I thought the Jung would be, it's too bad it's not smaller, be a good sort of wise old man type.
It would be a
archetypal
wise old man
figure.
Type. Yes, it would.
I wonder if there are any sorts of generalizations that one can make about what sand play is good for or what it's not good for, the kind of person
yes.
who, you know, for whom it would be a good thing or the kind of person for whom it would be a bad thing.
Yes, yes. It's at one level, it's really good for people who have suffered trauma, because mm-hmm. especially early trauma, because early trauma is the memories of it, as we call it, implicit memory. The memories are in the body. They're really before there was the ability to verbalize. And so patients can't access that layer through verbal talking. And sand play can access very early infant time, those memories that live in the body that are unconscious. So it's very good for dealing with trauma in that way. It's also very good for depression because the person, be a child or adult, is so out of contact with themselves. And talking about it sometimes just doesn't help. And because they direct the play and they direct the production, through this process, they contact a part of themselves that has been inaccessible to them before. And in contacting that, it helps to move the depression and shift it into a different way and to transform it into something that has meaning instead of something that's so dark and barren.
Okay, and are there situations where it's counterindicated?
Well, at one point they used to feel that you wouldn't want to put a psychotic person in the sand
mm-hmm.
because it might be too stimulating and you don't want to access deep, deep layers. You want to help someone who's falling apart in a psychotic way to pull back together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been kind of a common protocol, though they are using it in different settings where there is work with people who do have psychotic episodes. So that part is mixed in terms of working with psychotic folks. But otherwise, I think it's pretty much can be benefit to most people.
Okay. There are many people using sand play who don't have the credentials of being a certified Jungian analyst, which, as we have said, is a very long and rigorous training.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about that? Do you think that's a dangerous thing, or you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that there is a sand play organization. It's called the American arm is called Sand Play Therapists of America, and the international arm is called the International Society of Sand Play Therapists.
Okay.
And these societies have trainings and a prescribed way of learning about Sanplay, and they certify Sanplay therapists who don't necessarily have to be Jungian analysts.
Okay.
But they've taken courses in Jungian psychology, and they've done their own Sanplay process, and they've been in consultation groups and had training from certified Sanplay therapists, so that there is a way to learn and go through a training.
Mm-hmm.
And to become certified so that you are totally able to do the work.
Do you see this approach evolving at all? Is it changing over time? And if so, where do you see it going in the future?
Yes, it is, actually. It's a good question, because Sanplay is in a very exciting phase right now from my point of view. And I think that in the beginning, Dora Kalf didn't emphasize as much the transference and countertransference going on between the patient and the client.
Mm-hmm.
There was much more emphasis on the production and what was going on in the tray, and not as much emphasis on what was going on between the patient and the therapist. And there's been a lot of work and writing on what really is going on between the patient and therapist, and a lot more talk about the transference and the countertransference, where it appears in the tray, and also what might be going on between the two people in the room, and what the therapist picks up in their own body that gives them clues as to what might be going on with the patient. Another thing that's very interesting to me is the new research that's coming out on the brain, and that trauma gets stuck in the emotional part of the brain, which is the right brain, and verbal language, of course, is in the left brain. And so out of the research now, they seem to be concluding that in order to access emotional trauma, you need to work in the right brain. And right brain work is nonverbal and is more in the expressive arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sanplay fits right in with that. And it is a right brain activity. And it very much syncs with the new research coming out about the brain. And that's very exciting for me.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, as we begin to wind things down, I wonder if you have any resources for listeners that might want to find out more about this approach, or if there is a book or two that you would recommend.
Yes, there's a site on the web. It's called SanplayTherapistsOfAmerica.org. And you can just go in there, and there's some articles. They talk about Sanplay. They have events, Sanplay events all over the country, and that are going on, be it conferences or individual workshops. And then they have certified Sanplay therapists in there if you want to work with somebody. So you can get a lot of information from that site. And there are now many, many books on Sanplay. And, of course, there's the original by Dora Kalf, which I like. It's one of my favorites. And there are many new books coming out now. And I think kind of perusing them and picking one you might want to start with is helpful.
Okay. Well, Liza Ravitz, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking about this.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Liza Ravitz. This was the first time that I met her, and it was a surprise to me to learn that I had a Jungian analyst in my own backyard who I wasn't aware of. So it was really a delight for me to sit with her in her workspace, and I felt like we had a really, really nice connection. She's a warm woman to sit with. And as you heard, I particularly lit up to the idea of Sanplay or Sanplay as kind of having a very close relationship to dream work, to it being a kind of way of moving a person into the dream space right there. And, of course, that's the same thing that got me hooked on the Tarot when I heard a later-to-be friend, Art Rosengarten, give a presentation in which he remarked that having the Tarot was an opportunity to work on a person's dream. Not everybody has a dream to bring, but you can do a spread of the Tarot and work with it very much as you would with a dream. And also, this session seemed to me to be very at peace with our earlier episode with Jerry Olson on doll work. Indeed, Tarot and doll work and sand play can all be, in, to some degree, put under the umbrella of what Jungians refer to as active imagination. And you heard me searching for this name during the interview, and the name I was reaching for and couldn't remember in relation to active imagination is Barbara Hannah, and that's spelled H-A-N-N-A-H. Somewhere I picked up the impression that she was pretty much the grand dame of active imagination. And if you're at all interested to explore this concept more, you'll find a number of books by her at Amazon.com as well as other booksellers. And two titles you might want to consider by her, one is called Encounters with the Soul, Active Imagination as Developed by C.G. Jung. And another title by her is Striving Towards Wholeness. In addition, I would recommend the book by the Jungian Robert Johnson titled Inner Work. And he has a great kind of introduction and review of active imagination in that book. It's really a wonderful book. One of the things that I meant to say during the interview, and I shared with Liza after the microphone was turned off, was that it looks like she's having too much fun. I mean, with all these toys in there, and, you know, it really looks like a lot of fun. And she laughed and agreed, but she said it's also hard work. And part of the work is assembling all those little figures. You know, that's been probably a process that has taken quite a few years. And another part, she says, is putting them away, especially after children have come in and scattered them all over the place. And then, of course, there's the work that's involved in being really present for her clients and helping them move towards their deepest selves. I have to say, I think personally I could really enjoy this sort of work myself.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
In the interview, you heard me say that I couldn't find any reference to either sand play, sand tray, or Dora Kalf on Wikipedia, which surprised me. Well, I've got a correction, and I don't know if somebody added this information since I did the interview or what, but I went to Wikipedia again, and I found that the term sand play as one word is in Wikipedia, and they make the point that sand play is the proper term when referring to its use in Jungian therapy, and sand tray is a more generic term used by non-Jungians. So that was a little bit of learning for me. And they had some other interesting information about it there, so you might want to go to Wikipedia. And here's your last reminder that Jerry Trumbull and I will be doing another Shrink Wrap Radio Live this coming Sunday, which will be February 3rd, at 10 a.m. Pacific U.S. time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/shrinkwrapradio, and you can join the web chat there, and you'll also see the call-in number if you want to phone in, which we hope you'll do. If you can't make it, we will rebroadcast the show here in the regular feed. We've got a new addition to our Frapper map. I'm so pleased to welcome Jacinta in Kuwait to our community. The first listener in Kuwait, I can tell you, as far as I know. And Jacinta writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. Thank you for improving my ability to multitask. Wow, our first listener in Kuwait. And what a beautiful picture of you and your son. Folks, you ought to go to frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio just to see this picture. Jacinta, I assume your comment about multitasking refers to listening to Shrink Wrap Radio while keeping up with your adorable little rascal. I'm not aware of any listeners in Barcelona, but I would love it if I had one or more listeners in Barcelona, Spain, who would be interested in meeting me when I'm there in May. I'm thinking of going to a conference in May, a market research conference in Barcelona. In fact, I'm signed up to go, and with the devaluation of the dollar and the expense of it all, I'm sort of reconsidering. But if I had a listener or two to meet up with there, that could really help me make up my mind. So anybody who's in Barcelona or who would want to meet me there in May, get in touch with me right away, shrink@shrinkwrapradio. And let me remind you that if you're listening to this show but not subscribed, please do subscribe. It costs nothing. And on our site, on the right-hand side of each page, you'll see an icon that says subscribe in iTunes, and you can do that, or you can subscribe at our sponsor's site, podshow.com. Now, speaking of iTunes, once again, we saw our biggest jump when listeners, back when iTunes featured us on their podcast page, and I think it had something to do with having a lot of positive mentions there, so I'd sure love to get mentioned again because it really boosts our ratings. And so many of you have written such wonderful feedback. If you haven't posted that feedback on iTunes, could I get you to do so? And then send me an email letting me know what you said or alerting me to the fact that you posted something there. And if you're in the U.S., I'll send you a copy. I'll send you a book, actually, one of the books that one of my guests has written. I've got some more books. Another way that you can be of help is that I now have flyers on the website that you can print out and distribute. Now, this is in response to a listener suggestion some time back. Just click on the promos menu at the top of the page, and you'll see that it's now a drop-down menu with a flyer item at the bottom. And there are two different flyers. And you can help by printing it out and posting one or more. If you're in an academic environment, there's an academic one that you could post on bulletin boards in and around the psychology department as well as other places on campus. If you're not in an academic environment, there's another one that might be more appropriate, and you can print that out and post it in places like laundromats, supermarkets, and other places that might have a bulletin board. So thanks for your help in spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio. And as I said, the sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy. You can purchase the domain name hangupthisflyer.com by using the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy.
Hi, this is Patricia Garfield. From Tiburon, California, at the IASD Dream Conference, and you're in a lucid dream with Dr. Dave. Lucid
and that
dream.
Reminds me that I really need to get around to interviewing Patricia Garfield, noted dream author, for this show. Let's dip into our recent emails. Regular listener and contributor Susan G. writes, "Dave, the Confronting Death podcast was very well done. Thank you. On a more amusing note and a different podcast, I was reading John Dean's Conservatives Without Consciences, which is a tirade on the Bush-Cheney Republican authoritative tendencies. I think you mean authoritarian. We need to distinguish between authoritative and authoritarian, and several people who made comments seem to confuse those two words. It's probably just a typo on Susan's part. At any rate, she says the Bush-Cheney... which is a tirade on the Bush-Cheney Republican authoritarian, I'm going to read it, tendencies, and how they can corrupt conservative principles. Not a book I would buy, but comes free with my print disabled book club. The book and podcast are really scary, so I appreciate your interview's coherent explanation." And of course, she's referring to the podcast on the authoritarian personality that I did I've forgotten the number. Susan, there's more on the topic of death coming. I'm currently reviewing a book on near-death experiences, and I may well want to interview that author. And for my other podcast at wisecounselpodcast.com, I'm going to be interviewing the world-famous psychiatrist and author Irving Yalom next week about his new book on death. Now, the actual interview may not appear next week. That may take 2 or 3 weeks before you find it on the site, but that should be a good one. And Dennis, another longtime listener, writes to say, Dr. Dave, I just wanted to shoot my vote and support for the long version of the sitar transition. You might recall I've been getting feedback about my musical transitions and the sort of Beatlesque sounding sitar one. That's what he's referring to. And I recently got feedback that I should shorten it up. So I think on the last podcast, I did play a much shorter version. So that's what Dennis is writing. He says, I just want to shoot my vote in support for the long version of the sitar transition. I don't want to start anything contrary, but I like that transition. That Beatle music had a strong impression at a very impressionable and transitional period of my life. That's just one more element of you and your work that draws me to listen and to connect with you, even though I've never met you in person. Thank you, Dennis. And thank you, Dennis. Yes, I think I was exposed to the Beatles at a very impressionable point in my life, too. And that's probably why that Beatlesque sound appeals to me so much. And your positive vote will probably lead me to play the long version from time to time. And people who don't like it can just skip over it. And that will wrap it up for email for today. Remember, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com, and that in addition to email, you can also leave comments about the individual shows in the comments area right on the site, and you can also leave voicemails on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod, or you can leave voice messages on MyChingo or on our answering machine at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Jungian analyst Dr. Liza Ravitz for sharing with us on sand play therapy. Of course, our next podcast will be the previously mentioned Shrink Wrap Radio Live, number 6, with my co-host Jerry Trumbull. For the one after that, my guest will be Dr. Sylvia Borstein, noted psychologist, author, and teacher of mindfulness meditation. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.